Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
What's up, everybody? How are you doing today? Things are sunny and great here. I hope you are having a fantastic week. I hope you have great plans for the weekend. If you're hearing this on Friday, I hope you're going to FNM. Good luck. And speaking of FNM, we have a pre-release coming up real soon, just two more weeks, and Eldritch Moon will be here. The spoilers look sweet. There are so many cool cards that I can't wait to try in Standard. It's going to be amazing. I also like the new Liliana. I know that she's come across as pretty lukewarm to most people, but who knows? It's a 3-mana Planeswalker, and those always tend to surprise people. Everybody thought that Jace Vryn's Prodigy was just meh when it first came out, and look at it now, right? So, we'll see. Of course, I'm excited to try all the new, cool, splashy stuff like Meld and Gisela, but I digress. Needless to say, I'm super pumped for the pre-release, and hope you get out to play some Magic this weekend and the coming weeks in preparation for that. I do want to say congratulations to Gabriel. He is the patron who won the June giveaway. He is getting a Shadows over Innistrad Fat Pack. It's coming your way, buddy. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you want to support the show and be thrown in the ring for a giveaway as well, go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon. Also, I do want to say that right now I'm running my semi-annual survey. mtgprotutor.com/survey is where you can go to take that. I really look forward to your input. I love being connected with you, hearing your thoughts on where I should take the show and how I can be of best value to you moving forward. That's what this survey is all about, is really learning what you need and how I can give it to you in the best way possible. I love doing this show. I really want to keep it going past the end of the year when I get out. And to do that, I want to know how I can best serve you. So mtgprotutor.com/survey is where you can go for that. Thanks so much for taking it. Before we dive into the interview, I want to give a quick shout out to last weekend where we had a team Grand Prix and Pascal Maynard made it to the top four with his team. Congratulations. I love seeing past guests go on and do great things. I also look forward to reaching out to the other top four teams and inviting them on the show for sure. And that's all I have for you here at the top. I'm just as excited as you to bring in our guests, sit down and talk about Magic. So let's dive right in. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a Swedish Magic the Gathering player who played his first Grand Prix in 2014, and since then has played in 8 others, including Grand Prix Barcelona and Grand Prix Manchester, where he top-8ed both of them. Prodigies near and far, let's welcome Jonas Freeberg. Jonas, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I most certainly am.
Excellent. All you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Jonas, the best place to do that is on Facebook, because he's not on Twitter. So you can say hello, ask him a question. He obviously knows a lot about Magic, and we're excited to hear his story. So Jonas, let's dive right in. Let's hear what you have going on out there in Sweden. Is Magic all you do? Do you have a job? Do you go to school? What do you have going on?
I actually just recently got a new job at the local casino. And in Sweden, all casinos is like run by the government, so it's pretty strict.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. What do you do? Are you a shuffler or?
Yeah, I do.
Cool. That's interesting. So the casinos, they are run by the government, so it's a source of income for the country?
Not really. It's not like the profit is not their number one concern. It's like more to have a good gaming thing going on and to have control over it.
Interesting. Okay, very cool. So you just got a job as a dealer at a casino. We had, oh man, I can't remember who else it was. We had another past guest who was a dealer at a casino, but here in the States. So that's really interesting that's going on. So what got you into that? Like, yeah, you said that that's a recent change for you. So what made you go that direction?
I have a friend that also deals at that casino, and he recommended it. Also, my big brother is a professional poker player from Sweden. So I am interested in the game.
Yeah. Okay. So you've just kind of been around it, and this is you dabbling your toe in there. I love it. Absolutely love it. So you just mentioned a big brother. So do you have any other siblings? Do you get to play Magic with your family? Or are you pretty much the only Magic player in your family?
I am the only Magic player, but my big brother played when he was a teenager, and he was like 11 years older than me, so pretty big guy.
Yeah. Okay. Big brother. Nice. All right. Before you this new job, what were you doing?
I was working as a chef, but like these past six months, I have not been working. I have only played Magic and focused on my other things in life. besides work.
Yeah, I love it. That is so cool. Look, you did a chef, and now you're being a dealer, and the last 6 months you've just been focusing on magic. That's great. I love how you just kind of doing a little bit of everything and just having fun, and just, yeah, I love how we have all these different life experiences, and we get to draw on that and hear from you. And so we would love to use stories to close the gap between where we are and where you are. So we would love for you to tell us the story of when you first got into magic. Tell us what it was like, who you were with, those first cards that you saw. Tell us that story.
I was in my middle school, like maybe 12 years old, 13 years old or something, and just walking in the cafeteria in the school. And I saw some older kids playing magic, and I walked up and looked for a bit, and I thought it looked cool. And then I remembered that my big brother also had these old Magic the Gathering cards at home. So when I got back, I asked him about it, and he showed me. He wasn't really into it anymore. He had sold his the most valuable parts of his collection, but he has some cheap cards, had some cheap cards left that I got to play with. From there, I played with other kids in school, and then I started to go to the local game store, play there.
That's excellent. What was that first set? When you started playing Magic, what was the first set that you remember?
I think it was Cold Snap.
Cold Snap. And what were some of the cards or the sets or whatever that your brother gave you?
Oh, like Legends and maybe some revised cards. And
yeah, so old school stuff.
Original Ice Age. Yeah, those old cards.
Wow, that is so fun. And do you have a favorite set? You know, since you've been playing since Cold Snap pretty much, do you have a favorite set?
I do. My favorite set is Innistrad.
And along the same lines, do you have a favorite card?
I do. My favorite card is Electrolyze.
Ooh, what is that for those of us who don't know? And tell us what it is, what it does, and why you like it.
It is a blue and red instance from original Ravnica block. I think it's Guild Pact. And it costs one blue, one red, and one colorless. And it says, deal two damage divided among like two players, two creatures or players, and a draw card. So you get to deal two damage, and you can split them any way you want. And then you get to draw a card for three mana.
Yeah, good. Do you have any, any stories that stand out that you just, that card really shined for you? Or is it just always kind of doing its thing, working in the background and getting you that incremental advantage?
I would say a little bit of both, because I played a lot of Modern, mostly for fun. And I like to play like blue, red based Snapcaster decks. It's very good in a lot of matchups. Like some of them you expect, like against Affinity with all these small creatures, and you can 2-for-1 them pretty easily. And also tempo, keeping in the game. But it's also extremely good against control decks, because control decks play clicks, they play Snapcasters, they play all these one toughness creatures that are somewhat hard to do because they are instant speed. So it has the role of a value spell, but it also controls the board and get you to keep the tempo in the match.
I can see, like you just said, the Snapcaster, Vendilion Click. I can definitely see how, you know, being able to do one or two damage split up as you choose can go a long way, especially if you're playing against decks like that. So that's awesome. I can definitely see that for sure. So sweet. Innistrad, Electrolyze. And you mentioned you play Modern for fun. Why do you play Magic in general? What makes Magic fun for you? What's kept you around all these years? Why do you keep coming back for more? What makes Magic fun?
I am very creative. I like to create with both my hands and also with my mind. I like to write. I like to build things. But in Magic, Magic lets me be creative in another way. I get to design my own deck. I get to make plays like two turns from where I am at the moment. It's very challenging, and that's what I like about the game, that there's no limit on how creative you can be with your cards.
Yeah, I love that. How you said it lets you be creative in a different way, because you've been creative with your hands and your mind, and this is kind of a little bit of both, mostly mind, but you get to assemble the decks and then play. Each game is different, so you get to be creative within the game and think ahead, and I love it. That is really neat. I love that reason for why you stuck around and why Magic is fun for you. I think that's incredible. And everybody has a unique journey. We all have highs and lows as we travel on our magical path. And you didn't start out, you know, top eighting Grand Prix. You started out in the schoolyard with your friends playing and with your older brother's cards and stuff like that. And so we want to hear two stories a high moment and a low moment, and what you learned from each of those. And so starting off with a low moment, what's been your worst Magic moment, and what did you learn from that experience?
Well, my first Grand Prix was the Grand Prix in Stockholm at 2004, I think. And I didn't do too well, but it was a very interesting experience. So when 1 year later, one of my friends asked me if I wanted to go to Krakow in Poland to play a Grand Prix, I instantly were stoked, and I decided to go. And it was a quite expensive trip for me, but I figured it was worth it to try it out. And I practiced a lot, and I played. I had zero buys, by the way, but I went 0-3 and dropped in my first Grand Prix outside of Sweden. And that was a very bad moment for me, because I had all these visions and all these plans for how I wanted it to go, and it didn't go right at all like that.
So a few things there. So yeah, very expensive to travel out of country, and then 0-3, that's it, dream crushed, game over. So why did you drop? Like, why didn't you keep, you know, just keep on going to get practice or experience, or what was going through your head at that moment?
Yeah, I think at heart I'm a very competitive player. So how I looked at the Grand Prix was, it wasn't an opportunity to get better first. It was an opportunity to do well first. And when I didn't do well, it lost the meaning of playing the main event. So I played some side events instead.
So what did you learn? What did you take away? I mean, so like you said, it was expensive. You traveled to another country and this is it. I'm going to play this Grand Prix. Boom. And then 0-3, that's it. What did you take away from that? How did you internalize it? How did you digest that? And what did you do moving forward?
I took it pretty well, like when I got some distance to it. And so I looked like, how did this happen? Have I done anything wrong? Why did I lose the three first rounds? And I arrived at that. I played a deck that I wasn't too comfortable with. I played a deck that I haven't played like much before. I had practiced with it, but I hadn't played a similar archetype much before. So that's one of the things. I was outside of my comfort zone. And also, I played like two mono red aggro decks when I was playing Esper control, and that's not the best matchup.
And so I'm assuming that one of your big takeaways was practice more with the deck that you're going to take, or practice more with the archetype, or what did you do different in the future based off of this experience?
Since then, I've tried to practice more, as you said, but also I'm always conscious about the decision whether I should play a deck that I'm more used to play. So when I go to an event and I have to choose a deck, I often analyze whether it's better for me to play the best deck or to play a deck that I am more used to play, like that archetype.
And that's good. I think that's good practice to get into, a good process to go through, whether you should play the best deck versus one that you know better. I think that's absolutely awesome. Now, on the flip side of that are the highs, and I would love for you to share your proudest Magic moment to date.
My proudest moment, like, in the moment, was when I won my first game day tournament. Yeah, I hadn't been playing very much competitive Magic before, and I had my own deck that I liked very much, so I decided to play at that event. It was the Born of the Gods game day, and I made it to the top 8. I think I came in 8th, and then I won three rounds in the top 8, so I won the game day, and that I was very proud, because I beat all the local good players with my own deck, and that was a big thing for me.
That's awesome. So you hadn't been playing long, and you went off to top 8 and then win the game day for Born of the Gods. That's awesome. And like you said, we all know who those players locally that are good, you know, and so we see them, they're always doing well at FNM or other events, and so you were able to roll in there and do your best and play with your deck and move on past these other players, and I can just imagine how that must have felt amazing.
Yeah, now when I look back to it, it's a very small tournament, but for me at the time, it was a huge accomplishment and a great success.
Absolutely. You know, it's the stepping stones that we have that make our journey. Like you said, looking back, it's like, oh, okay, you know, I did well in a game day and now you're doing well in GPs. So there's, you know, disparity in the size of the event. But at the moment, it's especially those early wins, they mean so much, you know, because then you say, hey, like, I can do this, because you know, you win a game day and then you say, you know what, I'm gonna go off to a Grand Prix. Like, if I can win a game day, I can make day two or I can make top eight. And you just kind of pile on and you keep snowballing your wins and into the Pro Tour pretty much. And so that's, I think that's great that you drew on such an early moment. So we have a high, or rather we have a low and we have a high, and I want to learn, or I want to hear what you feel is the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic. As you've gone through this journey and you've seen a lot and learned a lot and grown so much, what have you learned about yourself?
This is a little embarrassing to share online, but I will do it anyway. I am full of myself. I think I'm better than I am. I've been doing this for quite some time. I'm getting a handle on it now, and I'm thinking, I think I have improved in this area, but I often think that I am better than I am, and I think that I'm better than people that I am not better than. So that's a weakness that I have, and I have realized it when I play Magic. I have realized that about myself, and I'm working on it. I think I have come a great way, but
thank you for opening up and sharing. It takes a lot to do that, so I appreciate it. I do want to say, we had a previous guest that mentioned something similar, and it took a friend of theirs coming up to them saying, hey man, like, you're being a big jerk, pretty much, you know? And that was kind of like the slap in the face that he needed to look back and be like, wow, yeah, like, when I play Magic, I think, you know, I do think that I'm better than other people, and it's affecting my relationships, you know? He was treating his friends poorly, people that he would travel with and stuff like that. And it kind of took that to shake him up. How did you come about this? Did you just start noticing it in yourself? Did you have somebody point it out to you? What was it like? What was the journey like in kind of discovering this about yourself?
I have always been humble about it, I think. I haven't been open on showing it to others that I think I'm very good. I have been keeping it to myself. So it hasn't affected my relationships, at least that I can think of. But I have realized it by playing against players that I think I'm better than, getting crushed sometimes and even sometimes and winning sometimes. But finally, I realized that I am not that much better than people. And it has knocked me down to earth again. Or how do you say?
Yeah, I know how that is. Like, you know, especially when, let's say I've lost a round or something, or maybe two, and I'm down in the comeback bracket, as we'll say. And, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, like, I've only lost once or twice. Like, I can do this. Like, this person's also lost twice. They're probably not that good or whatever. And so I kind of get stuck in that too sometimes, where I think, oh, I'm better than this person. I can do this, you know? And then I lose again. I'm like, okay, well, that's that, you know? And so what do you do? You know, how do you combat that? Yeah, what do you do? How do you combat that? So that when you sit down, doesn't matter what round, doesn't matter how many wins or losses, you don't trap yourself by thinking, I'm better than this person, so that you always bring your A game. Because when you think that you're better than somebody else, at least in my experience, I don't play as well, right? Because I'm like, oh, I don't have to play as well because I'm better. So like, what do you do?
Overconfidence is your worst enemy. To be certain of winning is one of the biggest mistakes that you can make. You have to respect your opponent always. Even when you're one turn from winning, you have to assume there is a way for him to win, and you have to beware always. So when I sit down and I think, like, this guy, I think I'm better. I think my deck is very good against his deck. I think I have the edge in this matchup. I have to stop myself. I have to, sit down and just think about what can happen, what his outs are, what he can do to win, and what I have to do to stop him from winning.
So think about their outs and then what you can do to stop them. And you've played thousands of games by this point against hundreds of different people. You've seen so much, you've learned so much. And we want to ask, what's the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
I think that the biggest mistake I see people make, on a regular basis, is to play their cards, not to play their opponent. I think that people look at their hand and they say, I have 4 mana. This is turn 4. I have a 4 drop in my hand. I should probably play this 4 drop. But maybe if they have a 3 drop with Splash and they play against an opponent that has like blue mana up so he can have a counter spell, then you have to be aware that if you play your 4 drop, it will get countered and he will use all his mana for that turn. But if you pass with your 3 mana Flash creature up, sure, you will lose 1 mana by playing a 3 drop instead of a 4 drop with 4 mana up, but he will lose like all his mana that he kept up to counter your spell. And if he taps out, you get to resolve your 3 drop and then drop next turn. So like you have to play your opponent, not only your cards. Like in a vacuum, your cards can... It's very easy to see what card is best. Like the 4 drop is better than the 3 drop if your opponent has nothing. But if he has something, then maybe you should reconsider your options.
I like that. Play your opponent, not your cards. And I mean, it's so true. Like, it's very easy to just, like you said, look at your hand, look at your mana, play your cards without really thinking what your opponent has, which is a big mistake. Like, you really do need to take that into consideration. Like, what if you don't know? You know, what if you're in the blind and, you know, game one and you have no idea what deck or archetype they're playing? What do you do in that point? How do you play your opponent if you have no idea what they're doing?
If you have a good feel about the game, if you have researched the meta, if you have researched the format, like most often a couple of turns into the game, you can put them on a deck or maybe 2 decks and then work your way from there. Also, another great example of playing your opponent instead of playing your cards is not to overextend into effects that can like wreck you. The most common overextension like example is if your opponent has you're leading on the board, right? You're leading in the game. He has like 0 creatures out and you have 3. And you have 2 more creatures in your hand and you could play them. But not playing them doesn't cost you very much because he has 0 creatures and you have 3. So you don't need any more creatures to win the game. But if you play them and he has a like effect that kills all creatures, you have 0 creatures and he has maybe more in his hand. So overextension is a thing that I see people, a mistake I see people make often. And that is something I should focus on if I hadn't already.
Yeah, and we see that especially, you know, today, currently, with the token decks and the aggro decks and then the control decks on the other side. And you have to walk that fine line, especially if you're playing more creature-based decks, because for the exact same reason that you said, there's sweepers everywhere right now. And if your opponent has nothing on the board, just kind of keep what you have and punch in for, you know, however much damage you can, because if you overextend, like you said, now you have nothing and nothing in hand. And then your opponent can come back. So that's totally true. So as far as gameplay goes, what's a shortcoming that you have? What are you working on to better yourself as a player?
To look at the starting hand, not objective. Like I have to look at it. Well, if I'm playing a match, I know what I'm playing against. That should affect my mulligan decision. If I have an aggressive hand and I'm playing against a deck that also is aggressive, but slightly more aggressive, then maybe I should consider mulliganing that hand. And if I have a land heavy hand against a deck that tends to go long, maybe I should mulligan that hand because I don't need that many lands in the long run. I think there's many factors that should affect your mulligan decisions. And I am not historically, I'm not that good again at mulligan right time. And that's something that I am practicing on.
Yeah, like you said, there's so much to go into it, like depending on your deck, right? So, you know, some decks you need a few lands, some decks, like control decks, if you don't have 3 lands, for example, maybe you should mulligan. Aggressive decks can do fewer. Are you on the play? Are you on the draw? You know, that affects it. You know, the deck that you're playing against, like you said, all those little things come into it, because then it's like, okay, he's aggressive, I'm control, I'm on the draw. You know, he's aggressive, I'm control, I'm on the play. Like, you know, how does all that affect it? And is all these little things. And that's why, you know, like we talked about earlier, one of the things that make Magic so great, like there's all these little intricacies, all these opportunities to flex our creative muscles and really kind of exercise just these different, you know, decision making skills that are so unique to Magic. And I do want to touch on, I forgot to mention, when you said within a few turns, kind of going back, within a few turns you can peg your opponent onto something, and that's so true. Like you're not going to be in the blind for long is the point I want to make. Like as soon as they drop a land, like you said, you can start narrowing it down, because based on the format, whether it's standard or modern or whatever, they drop a land and it, you know, it's a dual land, so boom, now you know like two colors or something like that. And then by turn two, like you said, you could probably figure out at least a color combination and put them onto something. So you're not acting in the blind for too long. And then after game one, you know the matchup. So play your opponent, not your cards, and then mulligan decisions. So cool. A little bit more about you and what you have going on as far as pro points go. How many pro points do you have?
I currently have, let's see, I think I have 13. But yeah, 13.
13?
Wizards have granted me that if I reach 17 points, I get silver anyways, because I should have one more point during the fiasco in Barcelona. So I need one more point.
What happened?
Yeah, I made top 8, but I came in 9th, and because their system crashed. So, yeah.
Really? Oh, that's a bummer, because you weren't able... So you didn't play in the top 8, but you should have.
So they compensated me.
Well, they let you make it at 17 as opposed to... Okay, cool. So you have 13 right now, and you're going to get 3 for going to the Pro Tour.
Yeah, so I have like 17 each. So I need one more.
And how are you going to get that point?
I have one Grand Prix and then one Pro Tour to get that point. And I hope that's enough.
So what kind of record do you need to get one Pro point?
In a Grand Prix?
Yeah.
I think you have to go 10-5.
Okay, 10-5. What about at the Pro Tour?
I am not really sure, actually.
Not really sure. Just show up and do your best.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, I mean, it seems very possible, you know, like 11-5 at a Grand Prix, especially for someone who's used to that environment and can handle that level of, you know, of stress and focus. And then having the Pro Tour as well. That is so exciting. Is this your first season on the Pro Tour, or have you done it? Because let's see, we mentioned that you made the 2 top 8. So is this your first season on the Pro Tour?
Yes, it is.
So do you have a team that you are going to hook up with for Pro Tour Eldritch Moon?
This is Pro Tour Sydney is the next one. But this is like, it's somewhat an issue for me, because I have some friends that are going to the Pro Tour, and then I have my own team. I play at the team, and none of them for this Pro Tour. So I think I will test with as many people that I possibly can, but I don't have like a dedicated testing group for the Pro Tour yet.
You have any friends on Team Eureka?
I have friends in Team Eureka, but I think the cap for joining is at least to be gold.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so there's a level that you have to be at to kind of join some of those bigger teams.
Yeah, it's an issue. Like, they don't want to bring in people that are not at least 3 Pro Tours ahead.
Like, oh, okay. Okay. That makes
when
sense.
They bring someone in, they want to be able to practice with this person for a long time.
Yeah, for at least a year or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. So maybe next season, you know, like you do well at this Grand Prix, this Pro Tour, and you set yourself up for silver, and the next season you snag gold, and there you go.
Yeah, there is a theoretical chance of me hitting gold this Pro Tour, but it's very slim.
If you crush the GP and then you crush the Pro Tour, you can make it?
I think if I get one Pro Point at the Grand Prix and then top 8 the Pro Tour, then I make it.
Oh, well, there you go. Easy day. That's really awesome. So kind of moving into more like technical Magic stuff, what is your best or your favorite format?
Standard is my best and favorite.
Ooh, I love it. I love Standard as well. So let's see. Let's dive into Standard a little bit with you, Jonas. How do you select a deck? So we talked about this earlier. You kind of look and say, hey, should I play the best deck? Should I play a deck that I am more used to? Specifically in Standard, where it's shifting, you know, week by week, pretty much. When you're preparing for an event, like a big event, let's say a Grand Prix, how do you pick what deck to play in Standard?
What I said before is not true. It was true to me before, like a year ago maybe, but my approach to all formats right now is to pick the deck that's best against the best deck. Like I want to have an edge in my deck building process. I want to play a deck and I want to play the cards that beat the most popular decking cards. That's my approach.
So we have so much information online, right? So we can see what the best deck is based on results, and we can see the deck that probably is positioned to beat that one and things like that. But the thing is, if we're always just taking the decks that did well last week, we're going to be 1 week behind. So how do you balance, you know, using all the information that we have online, because those decks are having results for a reason. People are winning with them, so we know that they are tried and true. But kind of mixing your own little spice, I guess, so that you can be a week ahead instead of a week behind. How do you balance those two? How do you do your own deck building with net decking kind of simultaneously?
Well, I use net decking a lot, but not in the way that most people do. I look at the decks that went well last week, and then I try to beat them with my own decks.
Okay.
Right now, I think the most popular and the strongest deck is green-white tokens. And one weakness that I have pinpointed in that deck is that they have very bad removal spells. So, and they can't deal with planeswalkers. So that's my approach to breaking that deck. I look at their deck list, see that they have a weakness, then I try to beat that deck by exploiting their weaknesses.
So you show up with planeswalkers and like robust creatures that outmatch their removal, for example.
Yeah, right now I'm looking at a Jund deck that has mm-hmm. creatures that generate value when they are in play, like Tyler Tracker, then maybe some walkers. So if they can't kill my creatures, they will take over the game. That's my approach.
Good. So I like that. And like you said, you identify the best deck, you see what its weaknesses are, and how do you find those weaknesses? That just from experience, or, I mean, obviously you look at the deck list and you say, oh, like, they don't really have good removal. You look for, like, what are you looking for? How do you pinpoint those weaknesses?
Well, I think it's a matter of both experience and theoretical, like, ability to process the deck list. So I think you have to play against the deck mm-hmm. to be able to see what it does. And I think you have to have historical background when you analyze cards. Like, this card is similar to this card that I played with before, so therefore I can probably determine what it does or what its role is in this deck.
I love it. I think that's really neat, very interesting, and a nice fresh take. That's really good. So we have your best or your favorite format is, you know, standard. Just talked about how to select a deck there and kind of diving into that. Now, when you are preparing to go to these big events, like a Grand Prix or something like that, what does your preparation look like? Like, what does a playtest session look like? How much are you playing leading up to it? And what are you doing to get the most out of your playtest sessions?
I am odd in this way because I don't playtest that much. I rather play tournaments in the same rate that I usually do, both online and in person. But before a big event, I try to think about the format. I try to think about the decks. I think I want to think about my own deck and the relations between the decks. I think theory, I prefer theory over practice when I playtest. It might seem crazy, but it works for me.
And what are you theorizing about? So you talked about the decks and the matchups. So you're just kind of walking through and thinking how this deck lines up against the other and kind of what you do when you build the deck and whatnot, or what is it that you're kind of going through in your thought process?
I like to map the turns of the different matchups.
Okay.
Like, what's their game plan? What do their turns most likely look like? What are they doing on turn two? What are they doing on turn five? How much pressure will I be on turn five if I play this deck, like, most often? Stuff like that. Like, tempo is very, very important. So being able to answer and get ahead is important for me. So when I look at, like, a deck and I see their threats line up a specific way, or I want to be able to answer those threats and getting tempo at the same time. So I analyze the card pool that I have at my hands. In standard, that card pool isn't that big. And I try to look for cards that are good against the cards that I want to beat, looking for synergies.
Love it. I think that's really cool. Thinking about the turns, like you said, and what they look like, I can see how that'd be very beneficial. If you map out a deck's ideal turn sequence, then you kind of know what your ideal turn sequence should be to interact with that. And that will help you in picking a deck. It'll help you in mulligan decisions. It'll help you as you navigate that, that matchup. So I think that's really neat. So when you travel, what do you take with you, Jonas? What is in your tournament bag?
My deck, of course, and I lie with my own playmat. Even if you get playmats at most Grand Prix, I still want to play with mine that I have had with me for some time now. I like it. It's from Grand Prix London in 2005. Dice, a pen, life block. If I go abroad, I have clothes. I most often travel light, not with a big bag. And I have my water bottle.
And so we've talked about preparation, going off to the event, what you take with you, and how you prepare for it. That's great. To kind of wrap things back around to some of the newer players. So let's say we have someone who's new to Magic and they're loving it. They're all excited and they want to dive into competitive, but quickly realize, as most do, that Magic can be very expensive. So what would you say to these newer players? How can someone brand new at Magic who can't build the most popular standard deck or draft every day, online, what can they do to break into Magic?
Well, in some regard, I would practice on Cockatrice and practice with proxies, like print cards, and then play with those, not play with real cards when you practice. And then maybe trying to borrow the card that you need to play the tournaments. For example, I went to Prague a couple of weeks ago to play the Legacy event, Grand Prix, and I don't own a Legacy deck. That is way too expensive for me at the moment. So I borrowed one from a couple of friends, and that worked for me.
Excellent. And I was going to say, on the flip side, what can we, the players who are already in Magic and invested, what can we do to help these new people? You mentioned borrowing. So as players with collections, don't just like give it out to anybody. But, if there's a new player and you can tell that they have integrity and, they take good care of the things that they do have, then be willing to like bring them in and maybe, let them borrow some cards so they can enjoy the game just like we enjoy the game. And so I think that's a great way that we can, as a community, embrace the new players and help them break in, because it's not always easy. Like, not everyone's in a position where they can get every card that they want. So Jonas, do you have any resources that you can share with us? Like, where do you go to keep up on what's going on and kind of sharpen your skills?
I like mtgtop8.com. That's my favorite site for deck lists and like to analyze percentage of the meta and practice of decks and so on. So mtgtop8.com. I also like Star City Games. They have great articles. I don't read them very often, but I know they're good.
But when you do, they're good.
Yeah, precisely.
Love it. And do you have a non-Magic activity that you feel helps you get better at Magic? Is there some habit or something that you do in your life that you feel helps you get better at Magic?
Oh, that's a tough one. I like to cook and like preparing meals for my friends. That's very fun and very giving to me. I like that. So when I have Magic friends over to practice or whatever, I sometimes cook for them, and that's usually very appreciated. And I think that leads to a better environment among us and better testing. So it's good food.
I love it. I think that's great. You're gonna be a welcome addition to any team for sure. Because Magic players are gonna love not having to worry about that. Sweet. Well, once again, all you prodigies out there, the best place to connect with Jonas is on Facebook, because he is sadly not on Twitter. So say thanks for coming on the show. He obviously knows a lot, and I really appreciate you, Jonas, for coming on. And I want to ask, is there a final piece of guidance that you have for us? Either something that you've already said you want to emphasize, or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
Not that I can think of. Sorry.
No worries. Jonas, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. It was a blast having you on, and you are a hero among planeswalkers. May you always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Jonas, so much. Loved having you on the show. Prodigies, I hope you learned as much as I did. As always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Jonas Freeberg. Just head on over there for links to any resources that he mentioned, as well as a synopsis of what we covered today. Before we wrap up for the day, I do want to give one more call to go and take the survey. mtgprotutor.com/survey is where you can find that. I really want to stay plugged into what you need and how I can best serve you. So this survey is all about exactly that. What are you struggling with and where you'd like to see MTG Pro Tutor go next? I love doing this. We have a fantastic community. I'm always looking for more ways to interact with you and to help you interact with each other. So thanks so much for being a part of this amazing movement, this great group. Head on over to mtgprotutor.com/survey to take this conversation one step further. And all in all, I hope you have a fantastic day wherever you are in the world, and I look forward to connecting with you next time. I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.